The Worth Report, featuring Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. We'll take a look at the past, present, and future of the financial landscape and discuss how it affects you, your family, and the world around you. This is The Worth Report. Now, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday. Welcome to The Worth Report. If it's Saturday morning, it's The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, along with my friend Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future. How you doing, Glenn?
Doing fantastic. It's June, summertime, the weather's getting better. I'm loving it.
Yeah, me too, man. You know, last week we had this wonderful conversation, man, about about funding weddings and wedding planning. And we've got a lot of interesting calls and a lot of commentary about
that.
Yeah, we did. Wasn't that something? Did you get any commentary at home when you got home?
Oh, yeah. I actually plead the fifth on that one.
Yeah, well, listen, let me tell you. I got a little silence, you know.
Okay.
She said it was a good show.
Okay.
It was very thoughtful. Then we went to the jewelry store.
Yeah, right.
So there you have it. So here we are this week, and we're going to go deeper. This week we're talking about financial infidelity. Mm. Man, that just sounds, doesn't it? Financial infidelity, that sounds terrible.
It does.
So according to the National Endowment for Financial Education, 75% of couples say financial deceptions have affected their relationship. Picture that. And 2 in 5 admit to committing financial infidelity in their relationships. So what is financial infidelity anyway?
And the other three, I'm concerned about those, Nick, because I think it's even more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Very few couples really have a full understanding of how their entire financial picture works. It starts in the beginning. If you look at credit.com, 40%, and we talked a little bit about this last week, Nick,
mm-hmm.
40% of newlyweds didn't know their spouse's credit score, which means they probably didn't know what was on their spouse's credit.
Wow.
So,
and nor was it a part of marriage counseling.
Exactly. So many people don't have financial counseling
mm-hmm.
for their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know what they're getting into. And it may start off as something very small, like this little credit card that I keep to the side, or I have this little account that's my quote-unquote play money.
Mm.
But then as time grows, as our finances grow, as we have children and there's more complexities in our relationship, now all of a sudden that's turned into something a lot bigger.
Wow.
You know, so now that account where it used to have a few $100 a month turned into thousands of dollars a month.
Mm-hmm.
That turned into a different type of credit card.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a credit card with a huge amount of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. That's true. Financial infidelity, when your spouse doesn't know what's going on. Now, there are many couples where one spouse doesn't care to know. But I think even then, it's important to make them aware, at least even generally, of where everything is, of what's going on. Because what happens if you become suddenly single, right? There have been so many widows and people who have lost their spouses that we've worked with
mm-hmm.
that literally did not have a clue
right.
on where anything right. was financially.
So on one level, I'm hearing you say that it ought to be a necessity for couples to share information about their finances. And both
Period.
Couples ought to want to know what they don't know about
Absolutely.
Their finances. However, this issue of infidelity, it speaks to deception, you know, a sort of willful intent to mislead and deceive, you know, your partner. Certainly we're not talking about sexual infidelity, which
right.
is outrageous,
right.
but financial infidelity takes on another face, doesn't it? So what kind of face does financial infidelity take?
Again, starting with something that's small that can grow into something that's a lot larger. Let me give an example, and this is one
mm-hmm.
that's really hitting a lot of households in America today. You know, you live under one roof, but you have two financial homes.
Mm.
I am seeing this more and more all the time, especially when you have if you get married a little bit later in life, and I say later, like late 20s, early 30s,
mm-hmm.
you're into your career, you pay your bills, and you've been on your own for a while, you've been independent,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. Now all of a sudden, it becomes difficult to move all that away. and say, hey, we're going to do this together. So you have two different checking accounts. And then you may have a third joint account where you split the bills. So you literally, you're almost like roommates.
Okay.
Not necessarily one union.
Well, let me freeze you there for a second, because there's so many couples that are married and agree to have separate accounts. And I think the perspective is to give each person their freedom to do the things they want to do, because, mm-hmm. It's easier for them to have their independence.
Right.
In a previous show, we did talk about the necessity of combining resources, because you can go longer. You can mm-hmm. do more.
You can
expand your wealth. But there's some elements in there, even with separate accounts, that that deception can really become an aspect.
Yeah, it can. I think really it's important that there shouldn't be anything that the other spouse doesn't know. I mean, we can really start and stop mm-hmm. there. Having separate accounts can make sense in certain instances.
Sure.
But only from the effect that the other spouse knows.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I feel the spouse should have access to all the accounts if necessary.
Right.
It may make sense because, you may go golfing. The other spouse may go shopping. Than to have separate accounts because it's easier.
Right.
Or if you travel a lot, it may make sense to have a different account.
Right.
For traveling purposes. Mm-hmm. I'm not really even a fan of that. Because I am so on the rewards point kick, I believe, and what my wife and I share, is we have different credit cards. So she has one credit card, of course. Mm-hmm. I have one credit card. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. bill is paid from the same account. So we both have access to the car. We can see where it is. It makes things very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pay it off if you don't feel confident, you think you'll overspend, pay it off every week. If not, pay it off monthly. And then so now everyone knows where everything is. Everything is mm-hmm. linked up, but I still have my independence, quote unquote.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Wow. So like it says 2 in 5 Americans confess to financial infidelity with their partner. So it seems like it happens all the time. It may be even a small amount. Is that as severe or as important as even a large amount? I mean, how does that kind of work? Is it some balance? Obviously, if it's a large amount, you can go into debt, all kinds of things that happen. But there's something deeper about that, even with small amounts, isn't there?
Oh, it is, because typically they grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give an example of a client who wanted to start a business. His wife did not want him to do that.
Hmm.
Okay. She said, I think you need to keep on working. You're not the business owner type.
Okay.
Right. So, and so he went, he started on his own, and guess what? She was right, because he did no planning. He just made moves and, hope for the best, just shot darts and just hope that something positive will happen. It didn't happen. And he ended up losing quite a bit of money on that deal. He didn't tell his wife what he was doing, because he felt like she wasn't going to support him. And really for the right reasons,
right.
Of course, the results show that. So now he had to come back and admit that to her.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they didn't make it.
Mm. Wow.
They did not make it.
That's unfortunate.
No, it is. Yeah. It is. And I don't know if that's the only reason or not.
Right.
But I know that happened. And then shortly thereafter, mm-hmm. they were no longer.
Wow.
So, what's in the dark comes to the light. It's important to ultimately share and really get out of this space. But it happens mm-hmm. all the time. What's the real reason why you can't share with your spouse? One is, your spouse may be a better financial steward than you. And you may have to admit that and say, I need to do better. Right. If you have, let me give an example. Let's say that you have two spouses and you put $1,000 apiece in each account. One spouse could be using that money for the kids.
Right.
The other spouse could be out there spending that money and mm-hmm. buying, mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. expensive golf clubs mm-hmm. every month, when they should be working together as a unit. They have more. The couples, right. and I've had over nearly 3,000 interviews with clients and potential clients mm-hmm. in my career.
Mm-hmm.
The couples who have the joint accounts, who work together, who are on one accord, have the most money. They have the most money by percentage.
That's
they do.
A powerful, powerful statement. So keeping that in mind, what other tips might you offer, you know, to couples establishing really financial solvency even after, you know, an incident of financial infidelity? How do they come back from that?
One is hopefully it's not too late. So it's something that's not so large that you can't overcome and you can't fix it. That's the first thing. So if that is the case, then sit down, talk about it. Start with what we talked about last week and earlier in this show. Start with the credit report. Look at what's out there. Look at what loans are out there. But also have an understanding, because if you talk to some other lenders, they're hard money lenders out there who may not show up on the credit report. So you need to get an understanding from your spouse. Where are you with those things? And the numbers never lie.
Right.
So you look at it. You see what's out there. So you can have a very informed conversation about these things. Maybe you've made some mistakes in the past. I've had many clients who have done that. They need to get a car and had a 21 to 23% interest loan because they had no other alternative. But now you do. So don't be so high and mighty that you can't have a conversation with your spouse and say, you know what, I need help.
Right.
That's a big part of this as well, because you want to keep those things separate because of things that have happened before you. Realize that when you get married, you don't know it all. And that's this period. If you walk in with an open mind and you can talk about these things, that's great.
Right.
And if you disagree, then speak with someone who is a professional, like myself.
Sure.
Someone who is a certified financial planner who can help you to really understand what's the best decision. Because, again, you may be thinking left. The other person could be thinking right. But the numbers themselves never lie.
Yeah.
And what a true seasoned planner does is takes your information and gives it right back to you so you can make an informed decision. Not someone that's trying to sell you something, but someone who can arm you with the right information so you can make the best decision financially for your family.
Sounds like, you know, in circumstances of financial infidelity, you clearly need a strong, expert financial planner. But you also sounds like you need a marriage counselor as well to work on repairing these issues of trust that run deeper than finances. Because it sounds to me like there's something heavier, you know, around this infidelity, that having good information may not be enough, relatively speaking.
You need
some counseling and some coaching. You need some therapy. You need to work some things out.
And for our listeners, it doesn't matter how much money you have. You can get planning done, in many cases, for free. There are different places where the CFP board, and you can go to the CF Certified Financial Planner website and find in your city and here in Charlotte where they're actually giving financial plans for free. There are times that we've done that as a firm as well, just so we can help and try to make a difference to our community. So there are places out there where you can get this done for free. You don't have to have $1 million to get the answers to the questions and the problems that you have.
Sure. So in your practice, are you seeing more men or women come forward with concerns about, you know, this issue?
It's both. I'll tell you what we are seeing is, because women are making more money than men now.
Yes.
In many cases, it's an interesting dynamic, because now there is a insecurity, because, you know, as men, we are taught that we are the breadwinners. We are supposed to make the most money and provide for our families. But what society is showing us is that whole dynamic is changing. And, you know, how can I still be comfortable as a man and make less than my wife? How can I still lead our family and make less than my wife?
Sure.
So that is something that we're seeing. And because of that, instead of taking this heads on and really trying to really focus on this problem that they may have because of this insecurity, they put their head in the sand and say, I tell you what, you keep your money over there. I'm going to keep my money over here and we'll just handle it that way. But that's not that is not the effective way, Nick. The effective way is to work on this together so you can really use your finances and resources for the greater good of the family.
So I bet you're seeing a lot of positive stories, too, where individuals have really worked on some of these issues and developed a deeper level of trust and come out of these spirals, I guess. And done well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And many of the ones that I've seen haven't been anything that's big. It's just because you may have a hobby and you just don't want your spouse to know how much it's going to cost.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
That's
exactly.
it. That's exactly. it. But yeah, but even then they need to know, because at the end of the day, you got the kids to pay and get them through school. You're going to want to retire. You don't want to work until you're 95. You know, you have things that you need to think of. You may be in the sandwich generation where you're taking care of your kids, but now you have your parents who are older as well, who haven't done well financially, who you feel a responsibility to take care of.
Yes.
So you have all these dynamics that you're going through. It's important that you work together to get past it. In fact, Nick, we actually have some success stories I'd like to share with our listeners when we come back.
Well, that's great. We're going to take a break right now, and I want to hear about those when we come back.
You're listening to The Worth Report with Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright, giving you financial news you can use.
I've just never been fluent in finances. Let's face it, I can make money, and I'm really good at spending money. But beyond that, not so much. But that's where Worth Financial, Glenn Wright, and his team come in. You see, when it comes to financial literacy, they're like translators. They've helped me understand my finances and how I can make my finances work for me now, tomorrow, and well into the future. And they can do the same for you. In fact, I'd encourage you to pick up the phone right now and call Worth Financial. You'll be doing yourself a huge favor. So call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or simply visit worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com. Hey, there's nothing wrong with speaking a new language.
Financial news you can use. This is The Worth Report. Now, back to your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Welcome back to Worth Report. Glenn, we were just talking about financial infidelity, and you had a piece you were going to share with us about a story. And let's go there. I want to hear the rest of that story. I'm sure our listeners do as well.
Nick, typically when you have financial infidelity, it comes from something that happened in your past. So typically it's, you know, I didn't pay my bills the right way, or I had maybe a marriage or a failed relationship previous to this one. Something could cause it. So in this particular case, this was a business owner, and they had a failed business. They were starting their second business. And they were going to go into quite a bit of debt in order to really make this happen. And in fact, they were going through an expansion. So when this couple met, they were in their late 30s. And so they had been in previous relationships before. So they were a little bit older. And they got married, but he did not inform her about what was going on with the business. Not in its entirety. And the reason for that was because of what happened to his business before.
Okay.
So he felt like he didn't want to bring that into the marriage, although he brought a lot of debt into the marriage. So it's time for her to get a car. And they go and say, we're making enough money. They're both, on paper appeared to do very well. She had a good job. And it was time for them to get a car, and they couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They could not do it. She found out that the credit was not where it's supposed to be. The bills had gotten too high. And it was an ugly situation. And we thought it was going to, it's going to be over. And however, she stayed there. They looked at it. She let him know that that she wasn't going anywhere, that she was with him for him, not for his money. Or, because he didn't have any. So, yeah.
Right.
That's
love.
That's love. So, in fact, she became his bookkeeper because that was the problem.
I see.
So they turned it around. They made it work, and it turned out to be a very beautiful situation. The business started to thrive because now she was helping with the planning parts of it, because she had a financial background to begin with. So part of this was really about trusting your spouse enough to let them be a part of the things that aren't always so great, to be vulnerable to your spouse. And they are fantastic. They are living the dream. They're both retired now. I mean, it's fantastic.
Wow.
So that is a story, but it takes two people to come together in order for that to happen.
Wow. Wow, that sounds like a tough journey they were on. And I'm certain that wasn't easy.
Oh, no.
For them.
No. By no means was it easy. But I mean, you know, clearly he married well. So I mean, because she definitely stood by him. So it was fantastic. And they're a stronger couple because of it.
Right, for better or worse, I guess that's the vow, right? For better or worse.
Yeah, yeah. However, we know that when the worst comes,
right.
You know, everyone ain't always there.
Wow.
But if you get married, you have to trust that your spouse is going to be there.
Right.
You can't hold that in to yourself. You just can't do it.
Right. But if that trust is broken profoundly, it's hard to sort of, I guess, recover. Impossible, obviously.
It's not.
But it's difficult to recover.
It's just called transparency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're in a situation now, today, to our listeners, and you aren't where you're supposed to be financially, you aren't comfortable where you are, and because of that, you haven't shared everything with your significant other, then there are some things that you know, you really need to create a checklist of different items that you need to look at so you can help. Really get the dialogue going and start the conversations.
Right.
Okay, so the first one we're going to talk about is just looking at your financial assets.
Yes.
And for most people, that's pretty easy because that's, you know, that's the good stuff.
Mm, right, exactly.
The cash you have, you know, your investments you have, your retirement accounts, your cars, your homes, and your jewelry, all of those things that are positive. But then you also have to look at your liabilities. What's on that credit report? Do you have student loans? Do you have credit cards that haven't been paid, that you aren't paying off every month? How many credit cards do you have? Do you have an auto loan? What are your interest rates on those loans? I mean, disclosing everything. What are your payments? So I met a couple once, and they were getting ready to get married. And she said, the spouse said, you know, I have a car loan. It's a nice, you know, nice car. My payment is only $378 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I just got the car. And you would think, well, that's fantastic. But me being the person who I am, I said, let me look at the statement. The car was an 8-year car loan, and the interest rate was over 10%. Okay?
8 years.
8 years. Didn't even know you could do that. I'd heard of 6 and 7 years, but this was an 8-year car loan. So they were going to pay for 3 cars. So quickly, when we looked at that, they refinanced the car loan. She didn't have great credit. He did. Refinanced the car loan and saved a ton of it and got the car rate at 1.9%, ended up paying less and paying it off in 5 years instead of 8 years. You know, these are the horror stories, but you can avoid that by going down your checklist, talking about where you are financially and working together. And if you're going to marry this person or if you're married to this person, then this is your obligation. So it's not, hey, you figure it out. No, we're going to come together and work on this together. And that's how you really grow and do the right things financially. So now there's checks and balances, Nick. So if I want to be emotional and buy something for the children, then if I have someone else to answer to, I might not be able to make that decision.
Right.
Or if you want to go out and buy something for yourself, and said, "Ooh, this new car looks very nice. Let me go get it today. The salesman sold me on it. No, let me talk to my spouse. Let's make that decision before we move forward." So something else to think about is who else do you owe? Because we talked about looking at the credit report.
Mm-hmm.
But if you borrow money from your mama, that's probably not on the credit report. But we need to know how much you owe mama, right? Because at some point, we want to pay it back. We want to pay back all our obligations. You know, now hers may be forgivable because it's mama. But if not, then let's look to pay it back. Well, in some cases, it could be 15% interest, too.
That's right. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I mean this is a long list of items you're checking off here, but I didn't hear you say IQ test. I mean, maybe that might be on the list, too. I don't know. It just seems
that's a whole nother story.
That might be helpful.
Yep. And I'm going to tell you one that's a big one. That before you get married or when you get married, you need to have a clear understanding about this. And I've seen couples break up over this. How much do you give in charitable donations?
Yeah.
How much do you give to your church? You know, I've seen couples very close to me that had huge issues because one person felt we're going to give 10% to the church. The other person said the pastor is too rich. And we don't need to give them anything. We give our $5 or $10 when we go to church, and that's it. So there was a huge disparity. there needs to be an understanding when it comes to this.
I'm holding back laughter so hard right now. But yeah. that's good, man.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, it happens.
Don't talk about my pastor.
Yeah, hey, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. And you go to church together, and then all of a sudden, you know, the pastor has a new car, and it's a fight when you get home.
Wow.
Because you're giving too much money. There needs to be an understanding on how much you're giving, and not just to the church, but anywhere.
Well, hold up for this church part.
Okay.
So we should do a show just on that. And I know you guys have written a fabulous book about, you know, giving. We should do a show just on that alone.
No, I agree. You talk about stories. I think it might come more, maybe more of a comedy show on this one than anything else.
I bet it is.
I've definitely got some very interesting church stories.
No doubt
about that.
I can't imagine the conflict you just talked about, you know, in terms of giving to the church, 10%, you know, or like $5, $10. I mean, it's really deep. I mean, that really is a complex kind of issue. It shouldn't be, one would think, if you're a tither and so forth. However, that's not how people come at this conversation.
Well, yeah, it comes to, you know, knowing who you're marrying. I mean, that's a big piece.
Right,
because, you know, you may want a car, you know, the Lexus that costs $700 a month versus I may want you to have a car that's $600 a month. Okay. Then, okay, that's a $100 difference. We can work. We may agree to disagree on that. But when it comes to charitable donations, I want to give $5 or $10, $20. You want to give your 10% maybe $3,000-$4,000 a month, right? So that's a huge disparity, and it can cause a lot of conflict.
Clearly.
Especially because the other spouse may not want to sacrifice in that way. So that one is, I mean, I've seen some drag outs.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how do you resolve that? How do you get to the other side of that?
Knowing who you marry, again, counseling.
Because you don't always know who you're marrying.
No, yeah, you don't. And you know what? And the person could change, too. So that's the other piece.
In a minute.
In a minute, yeah, absolutely. It was easy to give 10% when we weren't making any money.
Right.
But now that we live over in this neighborhood and driving these cars
that's
and living this lifestyle, it becomes a little bit more challenging. So it's important to have the conversation and not just, and don't talk just every year. I mean, you need to be talking and having a household discussion at least monthly to go through your household budget, to talk about your checklist, because these things change. And the more dynamics, the children, all these other things, of maybe the parents you're taking care of, all these dynamics change. It becomes more complex. It's important to be able to have these conversations so you can grow together. And then I would also say, have in this meeting, this is another drag out, a beneficiary meeting.
A beneficiary
meeting. For your estate planning, if I die, where is the money going? You'd be surprised how many times I've seen the former spouse still on the forms. And many times it's because they never changed them.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Or maybe they wanted somebody else to get something too.
I see.
It's important that you are clear. If something happens to you, no one wants to talk about death. I get that. But it's a part of life. We're born to die at some point. So when it happens, what's going to happen? We don't want any surprises in the 13th hour.
Right.
Right. So we want to make sure everything is lined up. So looking at your beneficiaries, making sure it lines up. I've seen clients who love their kids more than their spouse. And therefore, now the kids are getting everything and not the spouse. So what happens if you die before the spouse, right? So it's important to get an understanding of your estate planning of what you want to happen. Not just your wills and trusts and those things, but also who's the beneficiary on your retirement accounts, your life insurance, etc.
Well, that is outstanding financial news that we all can use. Boy, I tell you, this has been a great show.
Financial infidelity. Wow.
Wow. What a statement.
Don't do it, anybody. Start talking.
That's right.
See you next week.
See you next week.
This has been The Worth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.